Good morning. The numbers seem to have grown overnight. The space feels much fuller. So we're kind of heading into our second day of Sesshin, and maybe things are starting to settle down a little bit. Or perhaps the opposite is happening. Maybe things are starting to stir up. Sometimes it takes things settling down to allow what really needs to stir up to come up and rise to the surface. So as Roshi said, this is kind of like a crazy thing we're all doing, and it's really pretty radical in a lot of ways. You know, we're not doing meditation, just going to a group and sitting for 15 minutes and then discussing it and then walking out and going to have dinner and discuss the insights we had. We're really throwing ourselves into, in a lot of ways, a pretty extreme situation. Some people have come from other countries, which I can't even believe how brave that is. You know, it's brave to come from an hour away, in a sense, and do this. But another country, halfway across the country, where you don't know anyone. And this can be scary to do when you know people and you think you know people, because we get to know people and people get to know us in very different ways. And it's scary. So this is pretty radical. And I think because of that, a lot of transformations, both radical and very subtle, abound. Well, yesterday I was particularly touched by Roshi's talk in general. And of course, there's something about whenever you talk about animals, I don't know what it is, but it's just the best. So this metaphor of the cows was really, it just went right to the heart. So she told a story for some of you. This is just the briefest of synopses, not even really a synopsis, but a story used by Thich Nhat Hanh, in which a farmer came up to the Buddha and a gathering of monks, and they were just sitting somewhere enjoying lunch. And the farmer was really in distress. He was having problems with his property, and the most depressing concern was that he was looking for his cows. He had lost his cows. And he asked Buddha, you know, have you seen them? Can you help me? And Buddha answered, no. In fact, no, we hadn't seen him. But perhaps he could look in another direction. And this answer in that moment actually really satisfied the farmer. For whatever karmic reasons, I think we can get that something penetrated. And the farmer was able to really hear the depth of this pointer, this advice to look in another direction, which on one hand so stunningly simple, and on the other hand is stunningly deep and not so easy for any of us to do. To change direction in how we're thinking. So we hear that finding this other direction is really not about desperately setting off on another track to find our cows somewhere out there. The Buddha tells us that the solution actually has all to do with releasing these cows. That happiness is found in the fine art of cow releasing. So all those things, those ideas, those judgments, accoutrement, all of it on which we base our self-worth and our value in the world, our happiness lies in being able to release them. Because, you know, this farmer, you know, a lot of his self-worth and his value was based, his livelihood was, I'm sure, based on these cows. Certainly in his mind. So we get this sense from the parable that in this activity of cow releasing, there's really nowhere to go and nothing to chase. Somehow, going after them, they may just get farther away. Releasing has nothing to do with fixing or controlling the cows. Maybe, just maybe, wherever the cows are, they're doing just fine. And actually, we, without those cows, are also just fine. And as Bokushu Arshukso so pithily put today, they're very likely to find their way back. It would appear that cows, when we allow them to, really do like to just come and go. And perhaps we would actually enjoy them a whole lot more if we could just afford our cows that freedom to just come and go, to not try to make them stay, to make these particular cows stay in the pen that we like, and to make those cows that we don't like leave. Hi, Al. Let these other cows banished. So I think there's something here that actually, if we can mysteriously, it would seem, simply relax into where we are, the cows just tend to wander out to reveal themselves. When we stop looking out there and we just really sink into and relax into just where we are, all sorts of cows, not just the ones we're looking for. Simply following the mind as it is, with no agenda, no interpretation, just watching like a fool or like an idiot, like it says in the sutra we chant on retreat every other day, the jewel mirror awareness. This awareness is often associated with light, but this morning, during that period of sitting, that last period of sitting, the gentle rain just began falling. And I could just literally feel my whole body softening. This hard crust was being permeated by just this exquisite, falling, gentle rain. So I think our awareness can also be just like this rain. Or closer yet, maybe this awareness is the rain. Just sitting here, being, observing the many comings and goings and doings of what is happening in our minds now, in this moment. In this activity of seeing, watching, we naturally connect with some very, very deep aspect of our being, which is not seen, but which is seeing. Who exactly is watching these cows? So when we simply observe our minds without looking for anything in particular, preconceived, a kind of space just opens up. Really, it's like an open field of seeing. And in this open landscape, all aspects of our being, of our minds, actually can become interesting. What's this like? My lost cow, my demons, my desires, my fears, my boredom, my irritation. What's going on here? Let me just see it and feel it, which is not the same as figuring it out, interpreting it, changing it, messing with it. Just following, seeing, being with what is there. So this field opens when we surrender our need to control reality to be any particular way. Because it's when we need things to be a particular way, we tend to not see and not hear what's right in front of our face, what's right inside our face. The surrender can be like the falling rain, softening our protective shells, which form around what we don't want to see, what we don't want others to see, what we don't want to feel, what we don't want others to know that we feel. And these shells can be really hard and rough and ornery, and they can also be more insidious and can look very beautiful. And deceptively deceptive. But when we actually let them begin to soften and realize that in this field it is actually safe for all things to appear, like Vimalakirti's room, there's somehow magically, miraculously space for everything. There's space for ourselves, and there's space for the whole world. In this way, we can actually begin to penetrate all sutras, penetrating ourselves. Our wisdom can become like the ocean. We are the ocean. So, as Roshi so eloquently talked about yesterday, it is from the activity, the dignified posture of Zazen, that this field we can relax into emerges from us. Because it's not just the same way we just look at things. Because when we mindlessly and carelessly just look, it's amazing how much we cannot see. I've spent half this retreat running around looking for pairs of shoes, phone, all sorts of various things which are actually right in front of my face. And looking inside. So this Zazen practice actually kind of allows this field to emerge of itself. We create it as it makes room for us. Dogen says in the opening paragraph of the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance, which is the text we're working with this summer, when you leave the way to the way, you attain the way. At the time of attaining the way, the way is always left to the way. When treasure is left just as treasure, treasure becomes giving. You give yourself to yourself. I don't really know.
here.
When treasure is left just as treasure, treasure becomes giving. You give yourself to yourself and others to others. Perhaps this treasure is just ourselves. So Sesshin is designed to help us do just this, to actually surrender to just what is the reality of this moment, whatever it looks like. And because of this sort of highly titrated structure or system, we actually don't really need our discriminating mind to function here. We don't have to decide what we want to do, what we want to wear, where we're going to go. You know, that's just all taken away from us. And it's really simply down to each 5 minutes. If we just let go into the schedule, this is what's happening now, and this is where I need to be. And chances are, it may not be where we'd like to be, or think we'd like to be. But if we can let go of our own agenda for just this period of time and surrender to this schedule and just meet what is right in front of us, not behind us and not beyond us, these things might seem very, very different. If we are really present as we clean the stairs, we may suddenly find we are actually petting the cow's nose. Or maybe when we think we are making a complete fool of ourselves, when we are most awkward, we can most feel just how tender the cow's nose is, how soft the ground. All of us here, I mean, this is actually always true, but we don't somehow recognize it. All of us are in a completely new and different situation. Even those of us who've been coming for the past, I don't know what, 20 years, can attest that every year it is a completely new animal. We are not with the people who think they already know who we are. We are not doing the same things in the same way we always do them back in our lives. We are not following the same physical schedule we normally follow. This is actually also a pretty extreme schedule. Most of us don't get up at 4:30 in the morning and actually not stop working or engaging until we, you know, collapse into the pillow at night. I know my life isn't, I know there's probably quite a few people in this room whose lives are that busy or full, but I must confess I'm not. I'm not one of them. So we're just essentially not engaged in our typical role, how we see ourselves. For the most part, we're in new positions with new people. So, in a sense, we're forced to experience these situations and roles that are foreign to us. Some of us who like to follow may all of a sudden find themselves leading. Some people who really enjoy leading may find themselves having to follow. Some people who like to do one thing at a time may all of a sudden have 500 things to do at a time. Some people who love to do 500 things at a time may be forced to simply do one thing at a time. So, but these are actually very radical shifts for us. To experience ourselves in completely different ways, particularly with others, is not a small thing. You know, I think I've talked about this before, but Caesar Milan, for working with the most damaged dogs, they go to live with him in his dog community. He actually takes them out of the isolated family homes, which is the source of all their conditioning and all their stuff. And they come, and then they're with, surrounded with like 40 and 50 dogs. And it's like being in the community of with the dogs that's incredibly healing for these dogs. And that's where actually the most damaged dogs go to repair themselves. And I kind of feel in a way like this is what we're all doing. Because, you know, who amongst us is not damaged? Dare I say it? You know, but life is damaging. You're born. Being born is traumatic, you know? It's like trauma from the beginning. And we go from there. So it's likely, really, that, you know, there's going to be feelings of awkwardness, of a kind of groping, feeling our way. We're often exhausted, which can exacerbate a lot of those feelings. Not knowing what's going to happen next, even though it's so titrated. It's a kind of like, okay, what's happening now? Like, what strange activity we are going to be doing now, you know? And so we're actually in this awkward place creates a real vulnerability. I mean, we're a lot more open than we may know that we are. And the tendency is to want to harden around that vulnerability, to protect ourselves. But with the samadhi that we're cultivating from all of this sitting, we can inhabit these activities and states with a different mind, a mind of absorption, of penetration, if we allow it. Don't distract yourself from what is going on. In another text, Dogen tells us your zazen will protect you. And it will. And on some level, we must know that or we wouldn't be here. So, you know, I would encourage you to really try to be sensitive to when you find yourself wanting to harden, wanting to pull away. And this aspect of community, of being with all the other dogs, of relationships with others, heal us, but they also are what provoke us. And it's what kind of allows all of this stuff to really rise up. You know, yesterday I was, by early last evening, you know, I was really at this point tired. I hadn't slept well the past 2 nights. And I just was feeling a little, you know, just there was a lot of different stuff. And so I found myself being sort of explosive in certain little situations. And, you know, I try to not have that come out so much here, but it was coming out, you know, like exploding around a mop. So, you know, it doesn't really stop. You know, although what changes is how we react to that. Because when we actually look at these reactions, they show us where we need to soften, to penetrate, to look in another direction. If we use actually the blame, or it may be shame, or it might be anger, might be extreme irritation, it could be any one of a million really difficult, uncomfortable emotions, which are a lot more intense when you're feeling them than when I'm up here enumerating them. It's not some abstract thing at all, as I'm sure you've all already experienced multiple times. So I would encourage you to actually use those emotions as guideposts, almost as on your path. Oh, here's where I need to just penetrate. Just let me just relax into this and feel, what is this really about? And this takes time. Just let it be. You know, retreats are not one day. You know, there's really an extended period of time to be in this container. So, let yourself not know. Just be with it and see what the sutra of your own experience unfolds for you over time. There's a famous Zen saying that is essentially, the deeper the shit, the richer the fertilizer. So moving out of our comfort zone makes for some pretty fertile soil. And if you just allow the gentle rain of your awareness seep in, it may surprise you what can grow. So just really relax into where it is you're uncomfortable. I know I keep saying this, but you know, it's so hard for us to do. And if you can't tell, I'm speaking from tremendous ongoing personal experience. You know, I know I can't hear this enough. When pissed off, scared, embarrassed, anxious, all of which I've already been through more than once in this session. Use them. And it's very powerful what can transpire when we simply let these states be and let ourselves be. And I want to stress this because it's just as important to let others be. You know, we do get very internal on Sesshin, you know, and we can get completely enmeshed in our own comings and goings of what's happening in our minds. But it's really important to realize that everyone else around you is actually doing the same thing and are actually feeling as fragile as you are. And as irritating as they may seem, you can be sure that you are actually being equally as irritating. And that's almost more horrifying. That's really not comfortable when you see how irritating actually you can be. Speaking for myself. So part of this deal that we're doing here is, you know, it's almost like making a contract to give each other the freedom to just be, to be as awkward and maybe even a little strange and uncomfortable. I mean, this is how things may really appear. And when real work is going on, when real inner work is going on, that is often how it appears. It often doesn't look very good. But don't be afraid of the true dragon. You may find or meet someone quite new who, while completely familiar, you realize you don't know at all. And actually, this is given. This is given. Unknown territories emerge, which can be really raw, but again, it is this rawness which allows expansion. And this expansion is actually quite empowering, and it's quite liberating. And there is a lot of joy in the midst of our suffering. It is said the Crystal Palace has no walls. There's always suffering, and there can always be joy. I was gonna talk a little bit about Elaine Stritch, because she just died 2 weeks ago, and really one of the great bodhisattvas, I would say. For our country, and really she just told the truth and put it out there, and she was afraid and she wasn't afraid. She was afraid and she put herself out there, and she said that at the end of her life, when she did sort of an autobiographical show, and she had gone through a lot of successes and a lot of hardships in her life. she finally found the meaning in her life's work, which was the reaction that she got from other people who could connect to her problems. By just being real other people, it gave people the freedom to do the same. That's giving. Give even a phrase or verse of the truth. It will be a wholesome seed for this and other lifetimes. Give your valuables, even a penny or a blade of grass. It will be a wholesome root for this and other lifetimes. The truth can turn into valuables. Valuables can turn into the truth. This is all because the giver is willing. And I just have this one other image that hit me on my way up, and I just, there's this guy who's homeless, and he is on, which is really unusual that you see this, on Route 440. It's a truck route, and it's between Staten Island and Bayonne on the way to my studio in Jersey City. And there's this little strip of land, you know, grass, like in front of a kind of abandoned gas station right off the highway. And he's probably my age. He's in his 50s. And curly hair, graying. And he's there with this little dog, who looks like a miniature corgi. He's small, but he's not a chihuahua, but he's small and old. And this little dog just sits with him while he's there. He doesn't even need a leash or anything. He's just there with his dog with the sign saying anything will help, you know. And whenever you'd give him something, he never looks at how much you give him. You could give him a dollar, you could give him 10 cents, you could give him $5. It doesn't matter. He doesn't even, he just receives whatever it is you give him. And he has a little bowl of water for his dog. And as it's gotten hot, he's built this like hut with these pieces of, you know, soft cardboard for his dog, to shade his dog, rigged with umbrellas and just this whole funky thing covering his little, his dog who's panting because of the heat. It's like what he's giving to this dog and what this dog is giving to him. And what he's giving to us to witness this and to participate in this, and therefore for the grace of God go all of us. And the morning of Sishin, I was freaked out because the dog wasn't there. It's like, oh my God, you know, did the dog die? Because the dog's old. So this time I actually pulled off the road and I got out of the car in the gas station and I just had to ask him, you know, what happened to your dog? Is your dog all right? He said, oh, you know, well, the heat was just too much of him. This woman at the church is watching him for the day. You know, this is giving. Anyway, so I just want to encourage you to not hold back. Really, who is there to protect anybody? Sense where those doors are closed and allow yourself to penetrate here. Because through this gateway lies the Buddha field. And it's always no other place than right in this moment. where you have no idea what you give to the world.
Sentient beings are numberless.